The Short Game is listener-supported on Patreon. If you'd like to support the show and join us on our Discord, head to theshortgame.net or patreon.com/theshortgame.
Welcome back to The Short Game. This is a show about short video games, games that respect your time. I am Reagan Kelly, and I'm joined this week by two fantastic co-host men.
Nate Heininger.
And co-host man, Shane Kelly.
I just say that because Laura's not in the episode. I'm sorry you couldn't make it, Laura. This is a boys episode.
Welcome to this podcasting boys club.
Like the third time that you guys have started an episode off with this bit, and I hate it. And you caught me off guard with co-host man, which made me laugh.
But I just really like that Reagan is implying that we're a boys club while we sit down to talk about a game that is about a mother-daughter duo uncovering family secrets, and we are also here to discuss workplace women's issues, apparently.
Yes. So this is Open Roads, a game that's been, like, in development, like, in... I think it was announced in 2018 or something like that.
Probably about as long as this podcast has existed. Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. No, I'm off. According to the Wikipedia, it says it was announced December 10th, 2020, but I think it began development way back in like 2018. So this is a game from originally sort of. So this is from the Open Roads team, but you may know them better as many of the people who worked at Fulbright, the developers of Gone Home and Tacoma. So, you know, on this show, Gone Home is foundational. It was the first episode of this show.
We did it again.
We did.
We did another episode of Gone Home.
Yes, I was very glad that we did it again, yes. Because that first episode did not hold up very well. But man, Gone Home,
it's on YouTube.
Really,
if you
want
to go back and listen to, and it's in our feed too.
Ugh, if only I had a way to delete that.
I'm sure you do.
I do. I very much do. But I don't know. I don't feel like memory holding it quite completely. It's just it doesn't hold up.
Yeah.
But yeah, the game is amazing. I've always loved Gone Home. You know, when people ask me, like, what is a good indie game to try, you know, people who are, like, totally new to the whole thing, Gone Home is, like, one of, like, three things I point to, man. It's, like, it's something that I recommend to everyone. And I dearly, dearly love that game. And so I'll play anything by the team. I also loved Tacoma. I don't think it held up quite as well as Gone Home, but like, what could? I still think Tacoma was quite a good game.
Yeah.
And so when they announced this game, I was all in. I was very excited. It seemed like it was Tacoma was sci-fi space adventure. I was excited for a return to like the setting of 2003, you know, America. Yes.
2003 with a 16-year-old protagonist. I was 16 in 2003, so like, this is incredibly
right there, right in the pocket.
Yeah, like nailed it. I'm exactly Tess's age.
Yeah, and so I was very, very excited about this game. It's hard to separate the game from some of the weird situations surrounding its release, and we will talk a little bit about that. But before we get into talking about like the weird development controversy and sort of the strange reasons, kind of depressing reasons that this game is being released not by Fulbright, the developers of Gone Home, but instead by a new studio slash group called Open Roads Team. So very specifically not being a Fulbright release. I'm depressed about the whole situation, and it's sad to, you know, don't meet your heroes, et cetera. Like, but it's a sad situation.
To be clear, Reagan hasn't actually met any of the people involved.
I was trying to think of a better phrase for that.
You either die a hero or live long enough to become a villain.
I guess there's that too, but I'm not sure.
Stay out
of
Gotham.
No, not the same at all.
There's a situation which we'll get into, but before we do, I mean, this game is a game.
Wow.
It seemed for a while like this was not going to come out, or that it was going to... that it was, you know, going to be so completely overshadowed by its provenance that, you know, it wouldn't be a game in a sense. But here it is. It's a game. It's an actual game. You can play it. It's on all of the things, and it had its release last week, and we've all played it. Before we dive into talking about first of all, we're going to have a big spoiler break. This is such a narrative-focused game. A lot of our discussion about the game is going to be about the story, and that's pretty much all going to be in spoiler territories. But how can we set up, like, what is the pitch for Open Roads, and how does it relate to other games in this genre?
It's been a while. At least maybe I've missed an episode or two where we've covered a game like this. But, you know, this is right in short game sweet spot territory.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? Like, this is a blend of the, now famously named walking simulator. Your Gone Homes, your... Fire Watches, your Tacomas, things like that. I think it shares a fair amount of DNA with Fire Watch, and a visual novel. There's a lot of connections to the visual novel genre that we do on this show a lot as well. So this game felt like really especially over the 10 years now that we've been doing this show, you can see a lot of different influences that have come together to make a game like this. And I think that what the short sort of story pitch is that you're playing as Tess, a young woman who is helping her mother clean out the house of her grandmother, her mother's mother, where they had been living because they are kind of down on their luck. And while cleaning out this house, they uncover not only a lot about themselves and their relationship with each other and their...
because, God, nothing will show you the crevices of your relationship with someone like having to pack up a house with them.
Yeah, yeah, and then get in a car with them. You're uncovering a lot about the relationship between Tess and her
and Opal.
Mother and her father, who is divorced and is out of town but is still a part of the picture. And also, you start to uncover quite a tawdry potential family mystery that leads to you and the mom going to multiple locations to maybe learn a little bit about the grandma and a secret life that she was maybe seeming to be living, all deduced by some insanely coincidentally well-placed documents just all over the world, just perfectly well-placed documents that no one throws anything away.
Yes, this is a, you know, walking simulator in the direct lineage of Gone Home. And so, of course, you know, as you comb through these spaces, you're going to find lots of... well, you know, lots of cans and bottles and things with you know, nicely designed fake labels, but also lots of documents.
You're either picking up unnecessary random household items or specifically exactly the types of documents that
can we take a second to divert and just reflect for a moment on the history of this tiny subgenre? Because when the term walking simulator was coined originally, I believe pretty much in reference to Gone Home, or at least contemporaneous to that, a great deal of shit was thrown around. And that term itself was also kind of part of the shit that was being flung. And so the history of the genre has broadened out considerably into... a lot of different ways of telling stories through kind of the old trope of environmental storytelling, right? Mm-hmm. And the version of this that we're seeing here is a lot like those earlier ones where things, like you're saying, Nate, the spaces that you explore are telling the story, but also very much through a series of... chronologically discovered postcards, which can easily be strung together into a simple narrative, right? How do we feel about this genre today? Like, what, looking back, what is your favorite thing in this genre? And like, where do we see it going from here?
It's a good question. It's interesting. I do kind of feel like this early on with the release of things like Gone Home and later like Firewatch and even things like the Stanley Parable, this felt like a very exciting frontier for storytelling in games 10 years ago. Like 10 years ago, I was like all in on this specific genre as like, I mean, and even things like 30 Flights of Loving, like felt like the place where games were starting to intersect with film style storytelling more, but also the idea of this type of very game native storytelling that was starting to emerge also felt sort of like it was like best displayed here. And so I was really excited about this genre, and I wouldn't say that that's really changed. I do still like gravitate towards these kinds of games. But I do feel like it's less exciting. There hasn't been as much development in this sort of space as you would think. Like it did seem for a while like there was a new one of these coming out every couple of months, and that doesn't really feel like it's the case anymore.
This one almost feels like a flashback.
But it also means that like a lot of the lessons learned here have been incorporated into gaming as a whole much more over that time. So like, you know, just look at, you know, things like The Last of Us games and stuff like that, which, I mean, actually the first one would have been out, I guess, by this, but you know what I mean? Like there's a lot of games that have started adopting a lot of the sort of narrative ideas in the mm-hmm. quote unquote walking simulator space. So it doesn't feel like it's like a hot, fresh genre anymore.
Yeah.
But it does.
It certainly felt important. Hot and fresh when I played Gone Home. I was truly blown away at that time. And
yeah.
It is very depressing that at that moment, so much aspersion was being thrown at Gone Home, you know, right when it came out. It was extremely polarizing, and I loved it. And I absolutely adore the experience of feeling like I have a controversial opinion on video games, right? So I love that. But it was so depressing to me when it turned out that the person behind Gone Home was just another gaming industry asshole.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I have to kind of remember, like, this game itself is kind of a reminder to me that, like, there is no auteur theory in the gaming industry, right? Like, there's not, like, John Blizzard who made, like, all the Blizzard games, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. We cover a lot of
We do cover a lot of things that are,
made by solo devs.
Yeah. And small teams. But, like, it is very depressing because like, okay, Steve Gaynor, like, I'm going to do the very quick catch up in case you haven't been, this was also like came out, a few years ago. And so you may not remember the details or you may not have seen them at the time. Maybe you're not like ear to the ground about the latest details about the developer of Gone Home or whatever. Right. But like this game was announced and then, you know, it got funding from Annapurna. So like, this is like, I think the first time that, the Fulbright people were working with a publisher and getting publisher money. And so they got a larger team as well than they normally would have. And, from what I gather, they attracted a large team of a lot of up and coming game developers, especially women. Because, you know, look at the history of the Fulbright games. Like if you're, getting started in your gaming career, in your, you know, career as a game developer, as a woman, why wouldn't you want to work on a new game at Fulbright, right? That the creators have Gone Home and Tacoma. And why wouldn't you want to work on a game like
Fulbright was incredibly, must have been like a beacon, for women like that, because it's a, because like, just look at the story. It's a fantastic story about a kind of character that video games aren't telling stories about, who's a young woman. And, you know, they wanted to be a part of that. And then ironically, you know, what seems to have made Steve Gaynor like the most toxic person to work with is in part his seeming inability to like share the light and the credit with the people who he was creating games with.
Yeah, it does seem like kind of like that's the key issue, although there's also a lot of like sexism involved in the...
Yeah, can you imagine this game and then out there on the stage is like Steve Gaynor standing by himself saying like, I'm, you know, telling the story of a family of three women. No, come on.
Yeah, it's... So long and short of it is that Steve Gaynor was such an abusive boss during the development of this game that at least 12 people, mostly women, quit Fulbright during the development of this game. And I mean, you know, in the gaming industry, quitting in the middle of a project is actually pretty rare because of some kind of screwed up things about the way that crediting works in games. A lot of the times, if you aren't there,
it's hard to get gaming. These jobs were surely hard to get.
Hard to get, and you know it's a major thing to leave a company in the middle of a project like this without being able to be there for the shipping.
Yeah. There was just a labor dispute with I think it was Sega, and part of the labor dispute got early QA testers now get credits. Mm-hmm. On games. It's like it's so important to get credits in the industry. That's how you get your next job. It's become a part of labor strikes.
Yeah, it's a major issue. And then specifically here, like the stories that were coming out about this really did sound like it going above and beyond just being an asshole boss, like, you know, consistently demeaning his staff to other leadership in front of them. It sounded like kind of like anything that didn't specifically come from him, he would demean, ridicule, throw out, like true power trip shit, but also just like,
yeah,
with a clear, like, gendered angle to it. Just really bad scene.
I have a quote here. So a former employee who held a leadership role compared working for Gaynor to, quote, working for a high school mean girl. His go-to weapon was to laugh at people's opinions and embarrass them in front of other people. And then another employee described their, quote, personal experience of having Steve Gaynor as my manager was a toxic and unhealthy dynamic. So,
yeah. And 12 people on a team, like, I don't even know how large of a team they had, but like 12 people.
I actually read that it was 15 people.
Okay, there you go. So almost everybody. It was a revolving door because they couldn't keep people because they couldn't get along with Steve Gaynor. And, you know, also, like, I'll say, like, when I first started hearing about this, I was worried it was, this is kind of weird to say, but I was worried it was going to be worse. At least it doesn't seem like he was like a sex monster or something. But he does seem like the kind of toxic person.
A sexist monster.
Yes. But he shouldn't be in a leadership position over literally anyone, especially not like a huge team of mostly marginalized, young, beginning of their career developers who are beholden to him for their livelihood and their entire careers, right? Like, just nightmare situation. And so long and short of it is that the end result was finally, after many complaints, many people leaving the team, they had no HR, you know, like they were just, it was just Steve, right? Like, he was Fulbright for all intents and purposes. But like Annapurna made a bunch of changes, you know, made him bring in some HR, made him, you know, bring in some leadership consultants. None of it worked. None of it improved situations. And ultimately, what, I don't know exactly what the machinations were, but the end result was Steve Gaynor essentially left the project. Although this is essentially his writing, like he was still the writer of the game. He still was working on the game as a writer, but he did not contact anyone else on the team. It all went through Annapurna. I'm not sure exactly what the situation was there. and the game would not be released under the Fulbright name, because again, Fulbright essentially is Steve Gaynor. What it seems like is he wouldn't allow them to take the Fulbright name away from him, and so this has been released not as a Fulbright game, but as a Open Roads Team game, and Steve Gaynor is not even in the credits.
And there's really a lot of
wild
credits.
Situation. Yeah, a lot of credits. In fact, there's the beginning of the credits scroll, it has a screen that says, like, this game was developed, by many hands. And it's a very long credit scroll because I believe they made a point of including everyone who is involved in the development at any point, even if they, you know, got shouted out of the industry by Steve Gaynor. So I found the whole situation very depressing. And I was kind of hoping that this game would turn out to be a triumph, but also I was kind of dreading playing it. I wanted to see this game come out because I was hoping to see the product of all of this work by this whole team. But it's a weird thing to finally have this in your hands and see, like, well, this is what they managed to make despite all of the, you know, all of the situation that we just described. And then we have to talk about, like, hey, how is it as a game, right? Mm-hmm. Feels a little strange.
Yes, I agree. That is.
But let's talk mechanics. Did you guys press F to mom button?
I did want to say that my favorite game in this genre is What Remains of Edith Finch, which I think is the game that best handled the fact that you are, try as they might, you are still basically walking down a path. And that game was so surreal that it worked, that the entire thing is contrived. And I ultimately think I really enjoyed this game.
I did too.
And I'm excited to talk about it from a gameplay standpoint. But I guess I'm hopeful that the end result of this, basically having this guy essentially kicked out of the game and his name scrubbed from the whole thing, is a good step forward for the industry and maybe one step in the direction of not letting people like that get into that position of power in the first place.
Yeah. I hope, like, honestly, maybe this is the wrong thing to say, but, like, I hope now that he's kicked off and is being a solo developer, I hope he's doing great work, because he is good. He's a, like, you look at his career, he's good at what he does. It's just
Reagan Gully, Steve Gaynor is good.
Yeah. solo developer is exactly where this guy needs to be.
Yeah.
But yeah, well, like
arguably the best part of this game is the story. And if that all came from him, like, that is a reality.
Yeah. Although it's so hard to know, look at a project like this and you're like, well, at what point did Steve's hands come off of the wheel? Where is Steve in this? And where are the many other women who, I mean, I'm not doing my proper research here. I know some of their names, but I couldn't bring them to mind right now. Steve Gaynor is like famous in the industry, and like the rest, like we talked about, the rest of these folks are either, you know, earlier in their career or were one small part of a very large project. And so it still feels like a Steve Gaynor game despite this whole situation.
I do think the whole situation is a little tragic. I remember this being, at the time that this news broke, it was something that felt a little close to home for me because I was a fan. His blog was really interesting. He had a lot of really, you know, kind of good stuff to say about games in general. He had a couple of different podcasts that he was on. One called Tone Control was particularly good.
I followed his Twitter account religiously for many years. He used to be at Fulbright.
Make that the title of the episode.
More like Fulbright.
More like Fulbright. Am I right?
Yeah, got him.
Gone Home was part of what drove Gamergate in the first place, mm-hmm. which is, to me, the beginning of the end for human civilization. So,
not that we're blaming that on Steve Gaynor.
He's got a lot to answer for. That's all I'm saying.
Yikes. All right, let's talk about yes. the game because I.
All right, let's talk. So yeah, the game opens yes. on the family home, which has already been substantially packed up and picked over in an estate sale. The matriarch of the family, whose name is Mary Marnie. Sorry, I can't remember.
Her character name is the grandmother is a
she's an advice columnist who goes by like Millie, I believe
her name was Helen.
Yes, Helen. That's right. Yes. Helen was her real name.
Yeah. So Helen has passed away, and you are kind of working your way through the house. So the first thing I want to say about the house, that games like this are all about environmental storytelling. I have been in many estate sales. It's something that I enjoy doing with my wife. This house bears a passing resemblance to a home that is undergoing an estate sale, but there are several things. First off, the place was far too clean for a place that's just had an estate sale. There is a lot less trash than you would have in a house after an estate sale. And in particular, there is a number of things that were in this house that are like day one pickings at estate sales. As an estate sale enjoyer, I would like you to know the house had several very nice potted plants. Those go pretty quick, especially ones that are as healthy as the ones that are in this environment. This is the kind of games criticism that I think the industry needs, guys. They also had a very nice matching full tea set. Those are usually like a day two, day three thing, but they do sell. This one looked like it had silver, looked like it was well cared for. And a mid-century modern wooden coffee table. Those are usually a day one pick.
Oh, yeah.
And beyond that, there was also
there at 8 a.m.
Yes, a pottery studio in the back of the house that the grandmother, Helen, was clearly a lifelong pottery maker. That kind of stuff also early, especially the tools for making pottery, which are extremely valuable and very resellable. So,
she's a sort of a low key celebrity.
Yes. So you'd imagine now that I have provided the most important commentary for the game, you guys can say whatever you'd like to about Helen's house.
It's funny you call that Savat. I obviously, as the least observant person on the podcast, which makes this entire genre always a little difficult for me. I'm always spending, I think, double the amount of time that everyone else is looking for shit because I never find anything. These games are kind of a nightmare for me sometimes because finding stuff is like the thing I'm the worst at. If it's like, hey, Nate, go into that room and get me the 3-foot by 3-foot giant glowing orb, it'll still take me like 20 minutes to find it. And so when it's in a game and it's like, there's a key somewhere, I'm like, oh, fuck. Like,
in a house like this?
Yeah, I'm like, I am not going to find this key, you know? And so everything just takes me much longer on a game like
this. Well, part of the magic of, like, I think specifically about Gone Home, but like this whole genre is that you're put into a space that has a naturalism to it that feels at least tries to feel like an authentic real world space, but it has elements to its design that are sort of like that, like shuttling you through the space in a way that is more designed so that if you need to find that key, you're going to find that key.
Yeah.
And the designer is going to have a plan for you for how you're going to move through the space, both by, you know, gating things off, but ideally in a more open way where they're sort of guiding your eye and so on.
Yeah.
So that's sort of the thing that these kinds of games do.
Which Gone Home did incredibly.
Incredibly.
And I think that is still the best example of that, where you ostensibly have a completely open house. I know there's some stuff that's gated and you kind of unlock it, but for the most part, a large percentage of the house is available to you. But I suspect that the vast majority of players followed an almost identical path exploring that house because of how the game just sort of
prompts you and leads you without ever saying anything, maybe by a lighted lamp or whatever it may be, that sort of or just like the basic nature of a gamer to like, I'm not going to leave this side of the house. This is where I started. I'm going to explore here before I go to the other side. Like these sort of things that we do naturally. And I do think this game had some of that. Like it does not achieve it as well as Gone Home does, but also the space is a little bit bigger.
I feel like this each individual space was much smaller than the house in Gone Home. And that's the thing that we haven't talked about that sort of like really sets this apart from other games in this genre, or one of, I guess, a couple things, is that this is a game that takes place across multiple different houses or spaces and is strung together in a kind of a road trip narrative. So the premise is, you know, in that initial scene where you're exploring Grandma Helen's house,
I will
discover
say,
this mystery.
With the name Open Roads, I expected to spend a lot more time in the car.
I agree.
Yeah.
But you do spend some time in the car between places, and that's a kind of a new thing that this game is trying to go for. I've played other games where you have like a conversation in the front seat of a car before, but like this did feel like, you know, a little bit different. You have this element of like, okay, now we're going to go to a new place where we're going to be like looking for more details about our central mystery of the game. And in that transit, you have some time to talk to your mom. You can play with your cell phone in the car. You can look at the map quest directions that she printed out. It's not quite like the same as like a, you know, wandering around the large open house, but there's still stuff to do and explore. And narrative to happen in the car in between places, which
arguably the car is where the most dramatic conversations happen in this game. And so I think that is part, like the most stressed I was while playing this game was in the car because of the subjects and the sort of heatedness of the conversations. There's a couple other that stand out to me, but I think a lot of the core heart of the game is addressed in the car. And I suspect that's where the title came from. Though I do agree that the title makes you think you're going to be way more on the road and the roads are going to be far more open than you being locked in the passenger seat.
Yeah. I should also say something about the length here, which is like I was expecting, given that like Gone Home was about a 2-hour game, right? And then I was expecting that this game...
For you, maybe. Okay. Not for me. You know how long it took me to find all that stuff?
I don't, honestly. I don't remember that. But
the puzzle to open the front door took me about 2 hours on its own.
Yeah.
But I was expecting this to be a lot longer, because it's taking place across multiple different spaces, plus you get those like narrative car scenes in between. But it's kind of not. It's still about a 2 to 3 hour game. And it accomplishes that by making each of the spaces, the houses, essentially, that you're going to, much less complex, much less dense. There's just less going on in them than in a large space like the massive house in Gone Home, or other similar games like the enormous space station in Tacoma, other games like that.
Yeah.
Which I am of a bit mixed feelings on, because part of what I really liked about some of those games is like developing that mastery of space, you know, like once you figure out the layout,
Firewatch, you start to learn.
Yeah. Something like Firewatch, you learn the whole layout of that whole area and you start sort of putting things together and, you know, it feels more immersive to me. Whereas like, you know, some of the spaces in this, you can look from one end to the other, you know, without moving your camera. Yeah. They're just a lot smaller and they're not much more dense in terms of the sort of like lived in details. Like this game felt to me like it had less stuff to pick up, less stuff to interact with than in a lot of other similar games.
Yeah.
I actually want to point one thing out that bugged me that was exactly this. In Gone Home, and in this game, you know, there are a lot of books laying around, and you get a little bit of a sense of who the characters are from their books. Mm-hmm. The books in this game don't have anything on the back of them. There's almost no book that has anything but a blank back.
I noticed
which
that too.
Is not realistic at all. Like there's stuff on the back of books. I don't know why. So many of the books in this game, nearly all of the ones that I picked up, they allow you to pick them up and look at the back, and yet the back is blank. Very strange.
And a bit of a missed opportunity, because you're right, like something like Firewatch, like you go up to the shelf, you take a book down, and like it's a character moment, because you see the book that they were reading, but you can read a blurb on the back that tells you a little bit about it. And it's a place for there to be, you know, jokes or just a little more detail about something. It's never like super plot, like they're not relying on everybody picking up a particular book and reading the back, but it's part of that immersive thing. And you're right, there's just... It's like Grandma Helen died and left 15 pieces of paper in her house, and 8 of them were specifically letters about her secrets, right?
Mm-hmm. Like, yeah. She's a writer, and she has a roll-top desk and a filing cabinet in her house, and yet every postcard that she has ever exchanged with every man she's ever known is spread equidistant from one another across the entire, across every surface of the building, including the crawl space.
That was, the crawl space one was pretty funny. That was ultimately my only real criticism of the game, because I really did enjoy it. I think mm-hmm. overall, I think this is a cool game. Is that like...
We are nitpicking.
We are. I think this is a fair problem with the game, and I don't know exactly what the solution is, because I'm a little torn on like... I think Gone Home, you know, we're going to compare it to that a lot. Yes, it was nice. You pick up things, and it was all tied to the character. And in this game, they like 90% of what you're picking up is just trash, like literally trash, like either stuff that was not you, like was not sold in the estate sale and has no bearing on the character, like you said, a book with no cover on it or something like that, or it's like a pair of scissors, a spatula, like multiple box cutters, empty cans, all like just stuff except for the pieces of paper that were really, really specific to the task.
Yeah, the one thing that you'd think someone would like put away somewhere special, that stuff's strewn around, but
Which is why I liked like Edith Finch, where the whole thing is so surreal that it's like, okay, whatever. Like this house is telling, the house is telling me a story. And this is so like set up that it makes it feel like fake, where it's like, it feels like the whole thing is set up, you know, and I think they kind of make a few, the characters make kind of a few jokes about it, around like, I can't believe all this stuff is just left out this way. Yeah. But there's also like, there's a house, one of the middle settings. I don't think this is, too much of a spoiler. I won't get too specific, but it's a house that has not been touched for 30 years and it's been out in the wilderness for 30 years with open windows, 30 years open windows. And you go in and there's like a bunch of these very specific scraps of paper with the exact notes that you need, just like sitting on tables. And it's like, if this was, if this had actually happened, if we were going to a house that was been sitting for 30 years, the entire inside would be absolutely destroyed by animals and nature. And none of these scraps of paper that were seemingly for no reason left just on desks. It's as if everybody was raptured to, they're just like gone, you know, with all their prized secrets still sitting.
Everybody's gone to the rapture. Great walking simulator.
Yeah.
this is another aspect of it. It's like a lot of the other games in this genre do have a little bit more of like, in order to make a game like this work, there's an element, it almost feels a little cliche of like, where did everyone go? Right. Gone Home had that. Why you return home. Your family isn't there. You're not sure why. It's the 90s. So you can't call their cell phone. And so you wonder why
they're all
gone.
Ghost.
And you're just hunting around in the house for any clue to that. And as a part of that, you discover all the larger mystery. This game doesn't have much of that mystery. Most of the spaces are not currently occupied. You know, there's the space that is like been recently unoccupied because of the estate sale, and then most of the other places are that we're exploring are abandoned and have been for a long time, and it's a very different sort of setup, and it does lead to a different kind of thing. Like the central mystery is different. I just think it's a little less engaging to be like, we're going to go to an abandoned home and hunt through the trash and see if we find anything that relates to our central mystery, rather than where did all the people go? That's a more immediate question, right? It's a more immediate mystery.
Well, the thing that carries this game, where it has kind of stepped away from fully focusing on the environmental storytelling, and I think we're pointing to a lot of the shortcomings from like having one toe in that world and whatnot, it has really come a long way for this sort of game and advanced quite a bit in the storytelling between the two characters of the mother and daughter.
Yeah.
That is done very well.
And if this game has an innovation, I think it's this. It's mixing this, you know, having a character to talk to constantly as you explore one of these spaces is something that I don't think we've really seen. This is probably the innovation in the game.
And that's where I will speak about these characters for a moment. The vibe between Opal and Tess is fantastic for this kind of like story experience. First off, you know, this is dealing with some many heavy themes and so on, but the fact that they are so playful with one another and just start off like seeming like a mother and daughter that just genuinely like each other. The daughter is actually eager to go on a seemingly pointless road trip with her mom. They've got some excuses like finding bootlegger gold, but spend time with her mom and learn about their family. To me, this is a mom who has done something right. She has a good relationship with her daughter from the start. And, you know, obviously there's, as the story goes on, there's some challenges thrown that way. But as you explore all these spaces, I kind of joked about it at the beginning. There's a button that you can hit. It's the letter F. You know, we all remember press F to pay respects. Well, now it's press F to show this to mom. There's a button that's literally labeled, "Hey, mom."
Yeah, a lot of "Hey, mom."
Look at this.
Well, that's the gameplay loop, is that you're exploring the locations for relevant items. You're keeping a sort of live diary about your observations. And at certain items that are relevant to either the mystery or to something about the relationship between usually the mom and either her sister. There's another character, August, who is the mom's sister. The item is either related to the relationship between August and Helen, or August and Opal, or Opal and Helen. And when you pick up an item that is story relevant, I'm playing it on Steam Deck, so it's press X to mom. Mm-hmm. But it's like, that's when you know you have found a story relevant item. And again, to go back to my previous point about some of the annoying parts of this, is I got to the point where this game, where I was like kind of picking stuff up, looking for the "Hey, mom" button, and then putting it down if it didn't trigger immediately, because the vast, vast majority of items that you pick up that are not "Hey, mom" items, there's nothing to there's nothing about them. They're just there, just, I think, to give you something else to pick up. So I would like pick up an item, no "Hey, mom," put it down. Pick up an item, no "Mom," "Hey, mom," put it down. And it's kind of funny because she seemingly just drops them and you get like a little clank and then it ends up right back where it was. But it would be funny sometimes, because it'd be like, pick up a priceless piece of pottery and then just drop it.
It's hard to split that difference. I know, like, they have this, like, they could, you know, some of these spaces feel a little thin in terms of like how much stuff there is in lived in spaces. But of course, if you increase the amount of that stuff, maybe you put a whole lot more, I don't know, letters, books, other stuff that's like involved and you have to read it, but it's not story relevant, then it's going to pad out the length, maybe provide a little extra context on the characters, but it's also going to feel like, you know, you're stretching some things kind of thin. So It's a weird balance.
Well, all of the environments in the game are chosen as places that aren't specifically places that someone is currently living.
Exactly. Right? Yeah.
They're all like you. The closest thing you have is in the very first moments of the first scene, the bedroom, which you are actively packing up. And everything after that is a place that someone used to live.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I did like, I think besides the overall story, which I really found very interesting and pretty compelling, it's a good mystery driver. The other thing I liked the most about this game is I thought it looked really nice, and not just like the 3D models. I think that's fine. But the character designs, the way they do it, I'm not the best at describing visual design here, but the sort of flat character art on top of the 3D world that they've rendered,
yeah,
I thought looked really, really nice. And I really liked the character design.
So this is another thing that we probably should have talked about sooner, because this is one of the other things that's the most striking about the game. The art style is really cool. It has the full 3D world around you that, you know, so many of these games have done. But, you know, in every game prior to this, like every walking simulator type narrative game that we've covered, if you get to talk about what's going on, then you're talking on a radio or you're getting like narration or something like that. But there's
there are so many different approaches. I remember Everybody's Gone to the Rapture had voices, but they were being spoken by little glowing motes that were
sort of
souls.
Echoes of people. Right?
Tacoma, another Fulbright game, had a lot of audio logs that were kind of enhanced by hologram recordings of people. Mm-hmm. But being able to actually explore a space and interact with another character as you do so is something that really is missing from this genre most of the time. So,
yeah. And this is a satisfying way to add that, and also to do it within the scope of a game like this, because, you know, they're not doing like ultra realistic 3D fully animated human faces kind of, you know, AAA territory here, but they're using this art style that I've really only ever seen that I can think of in one other game, which is Heaven's Vault, which is the sort of like 2D, very, very nice, low animation. Like, we're not talking about like, you know, thousands of frames of like custom animation for everything, but like enough animation to sort of bring off the characters having expressions and interacting and talking.
It's as if they're having a conversation, but you're getting the first 4 seconds of that character's like the way in which they're talking and the face expressions that they're making during that conversation for the first 4 seconds, and then they freeze. I don't know if that made sense, but it is like it might be a very long sentence that they say, all full voice acting, one of which by Kerry Russell.
Great voice acting.
Yeah, great voice acting. I really like the voice acting in this game. You might hear a full paragraph from this voice actor, but the animated version of their character had a like 2 second sort of emote where they threw their hands up in the air, or they crossed their arms, or they sort of looked down and furrowed their eyebrows, and the entire paragraph, they're now frozen in that look. But it is just enough to give you sort of a visual sense, and paired with
even that, I don't think is 100% doing it credit. Like, the characters have a little bit of motion to them, that even when they're like, they're sort of stock still, like there's enough to carry it off. There's enough motion to them that they do feel sort of alive, even though they are these 2D characters surrounded by a 3D space. And it helps that it's almost only close-ups. Like, there's never a moment where you're walking around and like mom is standing over by the kitchen or something, right? That you don't ever see mom or
in
Tess.
The car. She's driving in the
car.
Okay,
that's true. Apart from the car. But then she's like sitting static
she's just
in
sitting.
The car.
Yeah.
Part of that I think is good, because I think this style works really well for close-ups, like doing like the, you know, over the shoulder shots and the back and forth dialogue shots. This art style with the 3D surroundings works really, really well. And then I look at something like Heaven's Vault, which I loved and also use a similar kind of style, But it had the characters, these 2D characters, moving around in 100% fully 3D spaces. And it had to do some interesting tricks to make that not distracting. Like, for example, the fact that all of the characters' feet are kind of ghostly because they don't want to show you the characters' like feet clipping into the ground or what have you. Lots of little like quirks to trying to make this art style of 2D characters in a 3D, in a fully 3D world work. And so, like, I don't know, it's a good style for this. I was satisfied with it. I liked the way the characters looked. I would love to see more, you know, this style explored more. Just having another character present rather than just being a voice on the radio or whatever is a, it brings something to it for sure.
And there's a few other characters you talked to one, and using the more stuff like what Shane was listing, like this is what you would have maybe seen in a game before this innovation. You know, you talk to a couple characters over your phone via text message on your 2003 like Nokia T9, ripe with spelling errors and abbreviations that most of us have evolved past. But in 2003, that was 100% how everybody was texting. So that stood out to me. And you talk to someone on the phone, you know, and I think some of that is for the purposes of, you know, moving the story forward is very critical to the story. But I also think there's at least one character, a friend of Tess, that I think is mostly just there to make the world feel more alive and feel more vibrant and just have other characters for your character to talk to. And I think it all works. It really works. Like, you know, we've been kind of bashing the sort of gameplay loop of this and the item collection and all that. And I think that's all fair, but really, you know, most of what you're interacting with is this, it's this narrative side of it, the storytelling and this sort of almost like a visual novel. Like I said, at the beginning, it felt more like that than maybe one of these walking sim games that we've played. And I think it really works.
I think if anything, it shows that like story really carries this genre, which we already knew that, of course. You know, we know that like these are narrative games and they kind of live or die by having a good story and interesting characters. And also being 2.5 hours long. Like, I don't think I would play a I'd probably do a 7-hour version of this, but I don't think I would do a 20-hour version of this.
Yeah. Which, to your point, does make me think that might be why they were just like, just make all the papers on, make them all relevant, you know? Because, like, why does it matter, you know? But the game does, like, I feel like I keep going back to this, but the game does feel very grounded. Like, it really wants you to feel like this is a real human story, even though it's kind of big, and we'll talk about it after the break. You still like the issues they're dealing with, the relationship issues that they're dealing with, are very, very real. And I think felt very, very real. And it's really striking. And so having that offset with something that felt very, very contrived is where the problem lies. Like overall, like the game's high watermarks are in this part, the storytelling, I think the art design, and the way in which they deliver these characters to you really stands out.
Yeah, and it feels weird to be sitting here praising essentially the writing is the thing that I loved about this game, and also it's the part with the most dubious provenance, right?
Again, to your point, we don't know. And I think there is something that you know, there's the like the separate the art from the artist thing, which is difficult to do. But also in big things like this, if someone from the creation of it was horrible and toxic, you're almost disrespecting the other people on the project by undercutting the project overall. So
I will say, guys, there is a list of writers, including Amy Fincher and Harrison Gerard, with additional writing by Gracie Gardner. There's a long list of people who have written for this game, whose names are on it. So I don't know. I don't think that's too dubious. I think we're looking at the product of the Open Roads team.
Yep. Yeah. So, I don't know what, like, we've talked for, I think, already longer than we kind of expected on this first part. Trying to think if there's any other elements of the game that we haven't discussed yet.
Nothing major. I guess my kind of closing thought on it would be just that, like, this is a game that pushes this genre forward in a very small way. You know, this does not feel like a revolution for the walking simulator or like the next great leap forward in narrative games. This feels like a small measured evolution of what games from Fulbright were already doing. But still, that's, you know, another album from your favorite artist doesn't have to be the greatest album of all time to be something that's very exciting to get, right? So I was still excited to play this. I enjoyed my time with it quite a lot. And now, to Shane's point, I need to spend some time reviewing that list of contributors to this game and see what I can do to follow them for the rest of their careers to see, because I obviously, you know, obviously we need to see what the other, what I really hope this is a launching point for many great games like this from more people, and less toxic people.
Some of the names that are jumping out to me, Noelle Clark, she doesn't have a huge online presence, but she was the art director and animation lead, and I think did a lot of the character animation. There's also Amy Fincher, who I mentioned as one of the writers, is also the executive producer and did additional art direction. So seems like someone to keep an eye on. And I don't know much about Harrison Girard, but I don't really know much about any of these people, and maybe that's the problem.
Yeah, that is the problem. And, you know, here we are, like, I guess if we were better podcasters, we would have spent some time doing some research. But I did a couple of searches on some of the folks who I was like, I wonder who that is, and I didn't find much, or I found folks with very similar names who are probably not them. It's a tricky situation because from what I gather, a lot of these folks were relatively early in their careers, and it's they don't have the like widespread decade worth of name recognition that somebody like Steve Gaynor has. So it's a
speaking of names, Carrie Russell plays Opal, and Caitlin Dever, or Dever, I don't know, plays Terry Trixie. What's her name? Tess. God damn it. Tess.
Tess.
Terry.
Trixie.
It's Trixie.
And yeah, so, and I thought they were both excellent. Mm-hmm. I thought the absolute highlight of this game for me was their very loving and engaging dynamic.
Yeah. And the Carrie characters Russell's are a big star. So relatable and also still a little bit unique. Like Theater Mom is like, I have known this woman in a sense, not this specific woman, the many differences, the one that Shane and I think, you know, we both knew and grew up knowing the lady running a community theater, you know, for one thing, happily married. but like I have known people like this. I've known community theater directors, for example, and a lot of the things about this character feel so true to life and grounded and like real to me. And some of the things about Tess in particular are so relatable because I think, you know, like Nate, I'm not too far off in age from her. You know,
it was like almost too much.
She
like
had she has the web design business.
I was like, no.
On her like grape colored iMac.
Yeah,
on
someone who was doing HTML classes in like 1999. Yeah. You know, mm-hmm. I was like, yeah.
Tess, I don't need to go to college. I'm getting my web design business off the ground. I can code in HTML.
Yeah,
which isn't, you know, we're not mocking Tess. That's exactly where we all were.
That was for a lot of people. She made money. She had clients.
Yeah, she did. You know? She was making actual money at it. Good for her. That's a big miss, honestly, was we couldn't sit down at the iMac in this game and boot it up and see any of her web pages. Like, why couldn't I see her web design, man? Like, give me the web design. I want to look at her web design.
I see it. It's apparently good.
She's making money at it. Well, anyway, anything else we really talk about will be spoiler break territory. So I'm going to do some admin and outro here. And if you are sticking around for the spoilers, we're going to talk a little bit more after the outro stuff about where this story takes us and some stuff about the ending, the mystery of the game and so on. This being such a narrative focused and mystery focused game, that stuff is obviously off limits here, but we'll be doing a spoiler break. So stick around if you'd like. First of all, thank you so much for joining us on this episode of The Short Game. You can find our show on the internet at shortgame.fm. That's the site where you can find all the links to everything we do. All of our links to our various social media profiles are there, the shows and our individual profiles as hosts and whatnot. You can also find links to us on all the podcast platforms there. You can find a link to our show notes page where you can look back over the whole 10-year history of The Short Game and
listen to both of our episodes about Gone Home.
Yeah, you could search our archive if you want. Everything's there, shortgame.fm. And of course, there's a link there to our Patreon. Patrons, thank you from the bottom of our heart. Our Patreon really helps the show. Patrons get access to our Discord community, which is where we talk about the show, talk about games that we're playing, get suggestions. It's the number one place that we get suggestions from our listeners and from each other about what we're going to be playing and covering on the show. Great place. Thank you for joining us there. And of course, you can also just go to patreon.com/theshortgame if you'd like to find us. And we'd love to hear feedback from you. Let's see. You can also find all of us individually on the socials. But again, find all the links there at shortgame.fm. So thank you so much. I've been Reagan Kelly.
Nate Heininger.
And Shane Kelly.
And here it is, your spoiler break.
All right, I'm just going to jump right to the end here because I wanted to talk about this in the pre-spoiler break, but there's a thing about these games. Gone Home is the biggest one, but I felt it in Firewatch. I felt it in Tacoma. I always think there's going to be ghosts, okay? I'm just always walking around waiting for ghosts. And I was like, this game is too grounded for there to be ghosts.
And then there were ghosts.
And then there were ghosts. No, but then I thought, okay, not going to be ghosts, but I'm about to find a body. You know, I was so certain that I was going to open that final office door in the boat.
Yeah. And you're going to find Grandpa or
Grandpa was going to be dead.
Pierre had drunk himself to death on the boat.
Yep. I was for sure.
Shot himself.
Was it Tacoma where there's the body at the desk or that was Tacoma, wasn't it?
It's been too long. What's the
AI took over the spaceship?
That one was Titan Station.
That's right.
Okay. There, that one had a corpse in it. And,
yeah. It was early, not a big spoiler.
Maybe. Sorry.
Tacoma is the, I remember, that's the one with the holograms and it's like going back. You can review and rewatch scenes and stuff like that. No ghosts, no dead bodies. But there's just something about these games that just always, I'm always feeling a little on edge when I'm walking around.
That's something that honestly, I wish this game had more of, not the corpses, but the sort of misdirection. Gone Home in particular, like part of what made that game work so damn well was that it felt like you were walking into a haunted house and then it told you, a beautiful, touching story about a young girl discovering who she was, right?
Yeah. There was a little bit of that in this game, though, because once you really start peeling it back and you start to figure out, like, okay, there's some shenanigans at play here.
Yeah.
There was a little time where I thought the Canada grandpa, the boat dad, had killed Helen's husband. And
then they covered it up with, saying that he had a heart attack or whatever.
Yeah. And it was because they were having, the whole game makes you think.
Yeah.
that Helen had been having an affair with this guy, Pierre, right? Mm-hmm.
And then, Pierre was a, like a, you know, pulled off a bunch of jewelry heists and then hightailed it to Canada.
Yeah. And I thought he, because there was a single letter where they're like, Joe's dead. It's done. We can move to the next stage or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so I thought that they had killed the dad. And that was part of the plan.
Yeah.
And then
there was definitely that misdirection. Yeah. And that was like, that's sort of like the core of the mystery of the game is like, and I think it's a pretty satisfying conclusion to that. You know, it, although it does sort of feel like, you thought there was, you know, it was one thing, but turns out it was this other slightly less dramatic thing, but I was still fine with that. I thought it was pretty,
I liked it. I ultimately like, I think it's hard to stick the landing on a game like this, and I ultimately really liked it, and I thought it fit thematically. Opal is, I mean, it was sad. It was more sad. It was the saddest outcome, you know. But Opal's whole thing is that she's like had to be this tough woman because, by her perception, everybody in her life keeps leaving her. And then to find out that, like, that also had, like, her dad had left her, but in a way worse way than she even thought.
But also there's the sort of mirroring aspect to this, right? Where, like, this is about both of these women discovering that their dads left in mysterious ways.
Yeah.
So Opal is discovering that her dad, who she thought had died of a heart attack, actually just left for Canada and her mom never told her, while also simultaneously she's holding secrets about why Tess's dad is gone.
Do you guys remember when our indie game dad took his company name and left? That was so
sad. Side note on the dad leaving. Again, this game had very many, there's a couple corollaries with my life. And I don't know if you guys, if this meant as much to you, but the reveal that he was not a professional gambler, but that he was going to become a professional poker player. And
I knew that would affect you, Nate.
And she spun it at, and the daughter was like, well, it sounds like he's chasing his dreams. And then they directly reference the movie Rounders, which is like, no one knows about that movie unless you're in poker, in which case it is the single, that is like the poker movie. You know what I mean? Like
they talked about his bowling shirts being inspired by Swingers.
No, didn't they say Rounders? I think.
No.
They talked about Rounders too. I forget. I think maybe,
I don't remember
maybe they talked about both,
thing.
But I'm certain but they said the Rounders.
This was in the attic. There was a conversation have with the mom where they talked about how the dad always wore bowling shirts, and the daughter thought it was because he was really into bowling and just wanted to share his bowling pride. But
I guess
mom said, no, he just thought they looked cool. He didn't actually bowl. I think he got it from the movie Swingers.
2003 is right around when the poker boom happened, and Rounders is like the movie of that of the sport, so to speak. And so, all that to say, one of the writers on this game is clearly a poker player, because that little bit is the explanation that so many people who play poker have had to give to their families and friends, that it's not gambling. It's actually different. It's more of a sport, you know, and you should watch Rounders if you want to better understand poker. So somebody in the writing team is a poker player. I guarantee it, because it was exactly what people who play poker with and try to justify.
I kind of love it, because it's like that. He went to pursue being a professional poker player, which like is weird, but it's not like he's like out there gambling away his life savings.
Yeah, it's not this. It really isn't the same. But it's also funny because it's 2003, which is right when the poker boom happened, and a ton of people got it in their head that they could go and become professional poker players, because this guy named Chris Moneymaker won the World Series of Poker, and he had never played before.
That feels so ridiculous.
I know. It's all absurd. Chris and that's what's so funny about it, is that this was like a peak time where people all around the world were pursuing, like,
in ignorantly pursuing becoming a professional poker player because somebody who seemingly had no idea what they were doing just won the biggest tournament in the world. And it really sparked the whole thing. It was why poker was on TV so much in the early 2000s.
And it also feels like super realistic that this woman, you know, her husband goes off to do this thing, whether or not he's successful. Like, it's very realistic that she just doesn't understand what that even means or you know is viewing it in this uncharitable way, which you know, fair enough. Like,
I guarantee you a bunch of dudes left their wives to go and try to win a giant poker tournament.
Yeah.
And they probably all failed because, you know, it's just how it goes.
I think you have to be divorced to enter those tournaments, actually. Yeah.
So it was like, it was a real, almost like inside baseball read on poker. And it was very specific to that time frame. And I just really spoke to me because of my interest in the whole thing.
I love it.
But it was
I'm
rare.
Looking
it's
at his Wikipedia right now, and Chris Moneymaker actually twice divorced.
Knew it.
Yeah, I mean, it's very funny. But Rounders is a good movie. But I remember... It's a total sidebar, but I love that movie. It is the best movie for that sport. And I remember like really hyping it up to Molly, and like I finally got her to watch, and I was like so excited because I'm like, you're gonna love this movie. And we watched the whole thing, and when it was done, I was like, what did you think? And she said, if you want to play more poker, you can just say so.
Molly.
I was like, what? No, come on, Matt Damon, Edward Norton. It's a big, you know. It's like, yeah.
It was, wives, man. They know how to. They know how to get you. Never.
Anyway,
man.
Anyway, the story. I found it to be a compelling story. Like it was a good enough mystery that it made me want to keep picking up little scraps of paper to read about read the postcards. I did find it compelling, and I found it satisfying. Like I liked it. I thought the boathouse was strange and like a good sort of climactic environment.
I love the visual of like this is a place where a dam went up and this pier that this boat has been moored at is no longer a pier, right?
The boat is
beached. I was surprised it hadn't tipped over. It was
that goes to my other point. All of this should be wrecked.
Yeah.
It should all be gone if it's been untouched for 30 years. You know, the nature would have retaken it for sure.
Yeah. Teens would have been in and out of there.
There's a little bit of graffiti on it, which
places.
Yeah, it was like at least trying.
Very restrained teens in Canada.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess I just wanted to save for the spoiler part. Like, I wish that we could have, because I do think it's probably the best part of the game, you know? And if you're listening now, hopefully you've played the game and you're agreeing with us. But, like, it was cool. I was really satisfied that it was still it's like a more human outcome than I was expecting.
Mm-hmm.
And, I enjoyed the experience, even if it took me longer than you guys. I think it took me like 4 hours to beat this game when some people are doing it in two.
I think for me it was 3.5, but I think there was a little bit of idling at menus. And I've seen reviews saying they played it in 2 hours. I think you'd probably have to be kind of like, you know, clicking through dialogue pretty aggressively.
Yeah.
If you were going to play it in two.
I think the difference between those lengths is literally, do I listen to the voice acting, or do I just read and click?
Voice acting was good. I'm normally a click through voice acting person, and I really liked it.
Same. Yeah. I like to get through games quick. I don't know if you guys have heard my podcast, but yeah, no, it's I am a sucker for like real acting in video games, and this was definitely that.
Yeah, and I mean that's one of the things that we've said this before. One of the things that Annapurna does, the Annapurna model, is find a promising indie game, fund it, and get real Hollywood actors to do the voices. And they did.
We just watched Annapurna published it. It was a movie, Nomura, Nomoru, Indy Stevenson wrote it.
Oh, Nimona.
Nimona.
Yeah, it was phenomenal, wasn't it? I loved it.
I couldn't remember the name because my 3-year-old daughter calls her Gamona.
That was an interesting one. It was dropped by some other studio, right? It was going to be a Disney movie, and then
yeah, I forget what the whole situation was, but
it got dropped by either Disney or DreamWorks had it like mostly done, and were getting ready to drop it, and Annapurna paid for it to be finished off.
It was awesome, and my kids are obsessed with it. And
oh, that's awesome! I loved it. My kids liked it too, although I don't think they were quite obsessed with it. But like, I mean, have you ever read the
my kid? I didn't like it as much as I did.
Oh well,
no, I have not.
It's very different. They kind of fleshed some things out and changed quite a lot of other things. The book is worth reading, but it began as a web comic. I'm trying to remember. Stevenson is trans, and I don't want to dead name them.
Indy Stevenson. At least that's what his credit is. Indy Stevenson.
Yeah, N.D. Stevenson. Anyway, it's a phenomenal book, and I've loved it for years. I read it when it was a web comic. I read it again when it came out in book form. It's phenomenal. And getting a movie of it was a surprise, but it's not a truly faithful, but also a really excellent adaptation. It's like a really great alternate version of the story.
Without knowing the source material, I thought it was great.
Yeah, so that's the first Annapurna animation, but I'm very excited for kind of an indie game crossover. They're doing an animated movie based on Stray.
Yes, I saw that.
Oh, yeah, neat.
I'm hoping for the inevitable Annapurna produced animated untitled Goose Game film.
Sure.
Hey, it could happen.
Come on, if we're getting Stray, we can get untitled Goose Game.
Is the Stray movie going to be animated? Or
yeah, are they well, it's under Annapurna Animation.
Yeah, it's going to be a Homeward Bound type situation.
The cat actor would not stay in his backpack, so yeah. The movie has been canceled.
Yeah.
Well,
all right, let's wrap this
listeners
up.
Thank you so much for joining us on this episode of The Short Game. You already heard all the admin and outro. We don't have any time for what's making us happy, so I'll have to save telling you all about the GameCube mod I did earlier until next
Nimona.
Time
that's our
go watch Nimona.
Nimona was our what's making us happy this week, and I'll see you next time on the
Thanks
Short Game
everyone.
Bye
shortgame.fm.